Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 5, Season 11. Different show this week, it's always a different show. We've got Jack Bennion with us. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, how are we doing?
We're good. We haven't got Trevor Agnew, we haven't got Ryan Champion, but we've got Craig Breen. Hello, Craig Breen.
How are you doing, guys? Are you well?
I think we're good. We've been trying to get you for a while. You've suddenly become popular, and I can't figure out why that is, Craig.
not quite sure about it. It's been a while. It's been too long.
It's been ages, hasn't it? Listen, it's great to get you. Obviously, we've got you on because we've been trying to get you on for a while, and I know you've been a busy boy as well. But we've now had a week to kind of sit back and contemplate just what went on Rally Sweden. Have you come down now from that one?
Yeah, slowly but surely. But it was a fairly whirlwind weekend. Just one of those weekends where everything worked, everything just went in our favour. And it's been a difficult year and a half. For you know, the last while it's been really tough, and we've been working hard and trying to improve the car and get things going in the right direction. So to finally get a good result, it makes it all worthwhile.
At what point during the event, Craig, did you feel we're onto something here? This is possibly I'm assuming it's the happiest you've been in the car.
Oh, absolutely. I can tell you for sure. For one thing, it wasn't after the shakedown, because I had a horrible shakedown, really horrible shakedown, and a bad feeling with everything. And I didn't start the rally in the best of fettle, but. To be honest with you, maybe the second or third corner into the first stage proper on Friday morning, I got completely caught off guard, and I thought a corner was a lot faster than it actually was. And I had to just chuck it in, fifth or sixth gears up, chuck it in and hope for the best. And the whole thing just stuck. Everything just stuck, and the car worked, and I went, all right, okay. That was a bit of a surprise. And the next corner, I kind of, went in a bit brave again and chucked it in, and it stuck. And then I kept doing it, and it just kept sticking. So we kind of just went with that rhythm for the rest of the weekend, and it just all worked, and it all pretty much started from that first couple of K's into the first stage.
Obviously, you've been in the car quite a bit now, and the changes seem to be coming thick and fast. Are we talking night and day from kind of this time last year when Sweden came around to now?
Definitely. It's a complete turnaround, and it's not as if there's been one thing that's made everything that much better. It's just been a whole combination of things over the last 12 months getting better and better. And you just have to look at the times and where we were at last year, licking out stage on Sunday, last year. Chris ended up going on road mode for most of the stage. We were miles and miles off the pace, especially in the second pass when the conditions were more difficult. And this year it was one of the strongest stages of the rally for us. So that in itself shows how much things have moved on. And even if you look at the gravel rallies towards the tail end of last year, Australia and GB, the whole package is getting that much better, and there's more improvements on the horizon as well. So it's definitely all going in a much better direction now.
Craig, what is it about Sweden that works so well for you? Because it's an event that you've always sort of gone fairly well at, and even last year, we talked a little bit about how the car was performing, but you still managed to finish fifth last year. So it's still, an event that you seem to go really well at, and it's kind of the opposite to where you started, really, isn't it? So what is it that suits you so well?
Yeah, I don't know. I always like it. I feel safe to. It is a safe event, so I suppose that it's always a great event to build up your confidence. And one of my first ever experiences, my first ever experience driving any sort of rally car was on a frozen lake in Norway with John Ogland, plug for John. that was where I learned how to drive a rally car and how to slide the boat, and between driving on the lake and driving on the stages that he has. So that's where I got my grasp for car control. And I suppose when that's bred into you, when that's your grassroots way of learning to drive a rally car, maybe I feel that bit more natural, and that bit more comfortable driving on the studs and driving on the snow. So I don't know if that explains it, but it's just a rally that I always got along really well with. I've done it a fair few times now. I think that was the fifth or sixth time I did the rally. So it's always treated me well. I like it.
Well, that's another thing, isn't it? It's an event you've got a little bit of experience of compared to some of the other ones, isn't it? It's one that you've done a few times. So is that something that really kind of helps you going into the event?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose when it's all specialist like that, it really helps that they have experience, and especially when they're using familiar stages. Sweden for the last couple of years, they've adopted quite similar stages year after year. So that helps. So when you're fighting against guys that are doing it for 10th, 11th, 12th time, doing it 5 or 6 times, even still is junior, hard to believe. So, but still, yeah, it all helps.
I was just going to ask you about, we had young Tom Williams who's doing JWRC with us, and he's just basically been sent out to John Hoglund. Again, plug John. He spent best part of 3 or 4 weeks with him. I just wonder whether we're missing stuff, because he started off in quite a low powered car, and he's moved up obviously to the junior R2 car now. But is there a lot to be said, Craig, for kind of just working your way through? We see so many people being fast tracked these days, whether it's straight into an R5 car or whatever. Do you think there's a strong argument, because you've kind of come through the ranks, haven't you? You've kind of earned your stripes at every level. Do you think that's where your speed comes from, the fact that you've managed to start off on the lower ring, of a Group N car, front wheel drive car, and learned to drive the doors off that, and then moved on to the next level, and then moved on to the next level? Do you think there's more basis for a driver to do that than just getting kind of pushed straight into an R5?
Yeah, absolutely. We made a mistake at the early stages of, junior stages of my career, that I went, like you said, that first year in the ST and a little bit in the R2, and I started to do really well. We won a couple of championships, and we kind of lost our run of ourselves. I stepped up into a Super 2000 car way too early, and it was nearly the, it was nearly the end of my career, because that season, 2010, I think it was, we did the British Championship, we did the Tarmac Championship back home. We were struggling to beat Group N cars. Keith Cronin was able to beat me in a Group N car that year. So that was just way too early. I didn't have near or next to enough experience to drive a car like that. And it nearly brought an end to the whole thing. But lucky enough, I was given an opportunity with the Pirelli star driver in the JWRC at the end of that year, which was a step back, as I thought at the time, back into a front wheel drive car. But it was the best thing I ever did. I needed at least another year in a front wheel drive car to master the whole thing and to really get the experience and learn how to get the most out of a small car like that before, moving on up into a Super 2000 car. The following year, even after doing another year albeit in an R2 car, I was so much more older and wiser, and able to go on and win what was effectively back then WRC2. So it's definitely worth your while to take your time and exploit all the different steps up along the way, and you have to really master each one before you can move on to the next one.
You're not old, Craig Breen, trust me, you're not old.
I'll take your word for it.
Now, you've got, unfortunately, we come to the fact now, we've got a little bit of downtime. We're coming off the back of a really good result. Obviously, you knew what you were coming into this year with the program that obviously you're doing. Is it harder after a result like that? I know it sounds like a really stupid question, but is it harder after you've just had that result to take that step back now, obviously, for not doing Mexico? Or would it have been almost a bit more palatable if you wouldn't have had such a good result?
Yeah, I've thought about it both ways. Maybe if the things hadn't gone so well, the time could have been nice to contemplate everything and to try to fix what we have to do and, work on areas that need to be worked. But like you said, after coming off a result like that, we're all guns today and ready to go and give it another hack. And it's not ideal, but look, I have to be very polite about how I speak about it. And it's out of a lot of people's hands. It's out of for sure. It's out of my hands for the moment. And it's just unfortunate.
So when do you start preparing now? Because your next event back is, I'm just going through the calendar now, what's after Mexico? Not Argentina, is it? We're back in Europe. When are you back, Craig?
Yeah, it'll be Corsica, but I won't do Corsica either, so I missed the next two. So it'll be Argentina for me. Yeah.
So you're back for Arcade, so that, which is just, that seems like it seems forever away. Well, it seems forever away for me. God knows what it feels like for you. It's probably like a lifetime. What happens between now and then? I assume, obviously, that there's tests and responsibilities and things like that, so you are getting seat time.
I'll have a test before Argentina. I've got very little, really very little on between now and the week before Argentina. So it's all a bit strange. That's something I'm used to, you know, since I was, you know, a kid, since 8-9 years of age. I've been in some form of competition all year long, and you know, suddenly I have this big long break. It's a little bit strange, I have to say, but you know, we have to embrace it and try to make the most of it as best we can.
What can you do? You know, obviously, I know you're training all the time and things like that. How do you plan to keep yourself kind of sharp and out of mischief? Is probably the better question, isn't it? How does Craig Bean stay out of mischief?
Yeah, I always have to keep myself around engines of some sort. So I like my carton. So I've got a cart here, and I'll keep myself tipping away with that, and you know, try and keep myself fit. I was tinkering away with it today, getting it ready to go for a blast tomorrow, and. Just try and keep myself busy and keep training, and try to prepare as best I can for Argentina. I'll be keeping a close eye on how everything goes in Mexico, and try to take any information from anything that the guys learn over there for the first event on gravel of the year. See if we can put it towards the next rally, and just go from there. There's not really much to be had. There's not a whole lot of rallying going on back in Ireland, back at home either. So I've got not really to. Get my teeth into a follow. It'll all be a bit strange.
Well, there's a bit of rallying close to home, isn't there, Craig? Because your dad's picked up an RFR to do a bit of competition this year, isn't he? So, is there any chance he'll be asking you for a bit of advice? I imagine, will he?
Yeah, no, dad came back 10 years later, or 9 or 10 years later. He got an ocean, but he just rented the car to do the local forestry rally back at home. I've been on to him for it feels like years at this stage, you know, to go back and do something. And you know, he's a fantastic driver. He completely blows me away every time he gets in behind the wheel of a car. I would not like to go up against him on a tarmac rally back in Ireland, because he's still got a lot more wisdom about how to do things on the road back home than I do. So he did really well. I was, you know, everybody was delighted. He was fifth. You know, he was over the moon himself. You know, after 10 years away, you know, half a day, 50K to test him before the rally, and then straight into it, he was right up to it. So I just hope he goes on and does a few more bits and pieces, because. You know, it'll be great to see him. Great to see him back at it again.
You had a bit of course car duties as well in that event, didn't you? So was that a bit of fun for you in the Escort, or it must be always nice to get back in real drive now?
Yeah, a bit of fun. Obviously, the clerk of the course is a very good friend of mine, a bit of a mentor of mine, James Coleman. So he was. I was back home that week, and he needed somebody to do double O, so I didn't need a whole lot of persuasion, and we gave it a bit of a rattle in the woods for the day. So yeah, I enjoyed it. Great fun. I enjoy my rally, and I'll, you know, drive whatever the hell anyone wants me to drive. I'll give it a go. I just love the sport. I love being part of the whole thing. I especially love my rallying back home, and you know, I'm close to my roots. So it's was a great day.
With that gap, Craig, is there any event in particular that you're kind of looking forward to kind of tide that gap over, if you like, something to look at, or is it just a case of getting back in the car as quickly as possible and rallying it wherever you can?
I haven't looked at it in too much detail, to be honest with you. You know, since all the things happened in Sweden and even running up to Sweden, it's been all fairly hectic. So I've been pretty much stuck in that for the last couple of weeks, but. Nothing in particular. No, for sure there's a few events, and there's a few events back home, you know, maybe later on in the year that I'd like to have a go at. Obviously the Ravens Rock and Oakley one in Waterford, I'd like to have a go at, and you know, maybe one or two other ones as well, we'll see, but it's a bit away.
Last question, Craig, before we let you go, what were you listening to when you were tinkering with your go-kart?
Very little. It's freezing. I was trying to keep my hands from going numb. That was the biggest one. That was what I was listening to. It was. But I have to say, you know, I'm still in the 80s. We've still got a nice few 80s playlist going on the recce, and we've got obviously we've got new recce cars this year, and we've got the Bluetooth we've got Bluetooth radio systems inside the car, so we can hook the phones up. We've got all sorts of playlists going all year round, so it's all sorts of weird, wonderful things going on in our electric car. But nothing's changed on that side.
We won't ask any more about what you were listening to. I seem to remember, are you still listening to stand-up as well, by the way, when you're on the recce's? Because that was a lot. I remember talking to you on, I think when we did GB together, we were talking about even some of the stand-up stuff you were listening to. You weren't just listening to music.
Yeah, a bit of stand-up. Yeah, a bit of Tommy Tiernan's. Tommy Tiernan's been the main focal point. Well, we had Jimmy Carr, PJ Gallagher, yeah, a lot of stand-up. That's got to be a passing time.
It is. Neil Delamere from your part of the world, mate, who's ace. I've worked with Neil, and he's mega. Yeah, he's mega, honestly.
I've seen him on TV a few times before. He's a good guy. I'll have to download that one. It's a bit of inspiration.
There you go, download that one. Listen, mate, we're going to keep everything crossed for you, obviously, moving forward for Rally Argentina. I think we're just as gutted for you for having those couple of events off, but make the most of the time, and we can't wait to see you back in a car, okay?
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much.
Listen, thanks, Craig. We'll catch up with you soon. Thanks for joining us, Craig. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Thanks to Craig Breen, as ever, for joining us. He's always in the middle of doing something. He's just been working on his go-kart, and we were talking a little bit more about that off-air, but he still loves his cards, bless him. Anyway, listen, we obviously started this feature as well, which we're going to come to in a minute. We've got Trev back with us. Hello, Trev.
Hello, Tony. How are you?
We're good. Now, I didn't do Gary Boyd's fact at the top of the programme, so I'm going to...
Oh!
It's great. It's basically a pub quiz waiting to happen, and let's be honest with you, our pub quizzes are normally awful, as we found out at Christmas last year.
Legendary is the word.
It was so bad it was good. I think somebody reviewed it as... And speaking of reviews, by the way, thank you so much for some of the emails we've had in. I know Trev's had some pieces. We won't name people because just for obvious reasons, but people have got in contact with us with regards to coach and stuff. But before we come to that, I wanted to do Gary Boyd's fact. Bless him, he started this message by saying, we're going to keep this one simple, just one fact. Two events in 2018 season and six different drivers have stood on the podium steps. Six different drivers in the first two events has happened several times before, but in 2018 is the first time ever the drivers have been from six nationalities.
Wow,
there you go.
Another great one.
If we ever produce like Christmas crackers and stuff like that, where you get like the Christmas cracker, Gary Boyd should write specific rally ones, and I think they go down a bomb. To be honest with you, I think they go down a bomb. Anyway, guys, thanks for that, mate. As ever, obviously, Kiwi Rally fan, search him out on Twitter. There's always loads of stuff on there. Anyway, Trev, we had some really, really nice comments and bits and pieces with regards to obviously the first piece that we did last week with regards to why. Which was great. And we've had various messages. As I say, I'm not entirely sure whether we should mention people, but just the people who do listen, who have messaged in, who've kind of got involved, thank you so much. So we did why last week, Trev, and we've tried to break it down into segments. And we come to this week is looking at what are we trying to achieve from this, and you know, whether it's results, happiness, or whatever it may be, I guess, is what are we trying to achieve.
Yeah, just expanding on the why. Why do you rally? And, you know, if somebody wants to do it and they want to do it ad infinitum and become a multiple world rally champion, then that's brilliant. So what would that actually give you then? You start to sort of push down on that a little bit more. You find that people want to live in Monaco, and I've had these conversations with people. So eventually you find out, well, one of a few quid, they want to have choice then, and they want to get paid to do their hobby, which, you know, is a great way to approach it. So the why can mean various things, and hopefully that people, and you're right, thanks very much for the comments that we've had quite a few over the last week. People are enjoying this series that we're going to do. So once you work out why you want to rally, and that could be a clubman, that could be somebody who's absolutely going to nail it, what you need to do then is start to think more long term. And it's really surprising the number of people who don't even think beyond the next rally. And people you'd think with a lot of experience have got a plan in place for 2 years, 3 years. It's not at all there. I suppose the easiest way to equate it is at the start of the year, and comes Christmas time and you're heading towards the new year, you start to think of new year resolutions that you're going to do something a little bit more healthy with your eating or cut down on the booze or whatever it may be. But we tend not to write that down. And it's the same with starting to set long-term goals and trying to achieve long-term goals. If you write it down and you continually review it, and we're talking about regularly, even weekly, reviewing what those goals will be, you're more likely to do something about it because you start creating momentum every time you look at it. So that's one thing that has to be done. You have to write down what you want to do. And for me, you've got to look long-term. When I moved over to England from Northern Ireland in 1997, one of the first things I did, because I felt I was going to be serious about it, making that monumentous move at the time, was I put together a 10-year plan. And I used the help of Richard Burns at the time, David Lapworth, Robert Reed, of course, helped out. Just really bounced ideas off people. Well, I was managing Neil Wearden at the time, so it was going to be in partnership with Neil. And I thought, okay, how do I come up with the perfect rally driver? What does that look like? How long will it take for us to do that? And that allowed me then to stick in at the end of 10 years, and we want to be multiple, winning the world championship for a second time. And if you're serious about it, you're not just winning the first one, you're winning the championship for a second time, multiple world champion before you want to go. And just to put a flag in the sand, remember when you make these long-term goals, they're fluid. You know, you can move them, you can flex them. They're not set in stone in any way. You can keep revisiting them, tweaking them as you go. So in order to have somewhere to aim to, you need to do that. Now, if you set out on a journey, as I mentioned last week, and you get into your car and you want to go somewhere specifically, you're going to set the sat nav, aren't you? Nowadays, certainly with updates and traffic information every couple of minutes, that's what I do all of the time. You don't just get in the car and drive willy-nilly to where you need to go. So you need to have the target. You need to have something to aim for. And the surprising thing about all of this, I'm sure you probably, when you start thinking about it, you can recollect times when you've started down that route, and then all of a sudden things start to come to you. So a bit like an airplane starting off from its origin, heading to destination, it'll move sideways and you'll eventually get to where you need to go. So the first thing we need to think long term. And I'd say, as I said, 10 years. If you can't manage 10 years, you can't get your head around that, then 5 years would be the bare minimum. Now, with this long term goal, you've got to throw away any assumptions. And a lot of people struggle with it because they say, well, 10 years' time is going to take a lot of money, 2 million, 3 million euros. I'll never be able to find that. Never is a bad statement to make. There's always a way. Along the way, you'll need some knowledge, you'll need some skills, and you'll need the right attitude. Those are the three things that you need to put together in order to make this 10-year plan work. Now, a little boy from South Armagh, like I was in Northern Ireland, moving over to England, I certainly didn't have that sort of money, but very quickly I realised I could find the right people that will help me with that, and that's part of it as well, is seeing opportunities, making the best of opportunities, putting yourself somewhere where you can use expertise in the right sort of way. So 10-year plan is what you need. And that, again, it's not just anything that you want to do and change your life. It could be a complete life change that you're doing, not necessarily to do with rallying, but somebody serious about rallying, I reckon a 10-year plan.
Wow. See, I kind of fall into that category of not quite, you know, looking at the next event. But when I set off rallying, I just wanted to drive a rally car. You know, I had no aspirations beyond doing a single venue in a battered old Vauxhall Nova. Mm-hmm. And then the reality kind of kicked in of, well, I've done that now. Now I want to kind of do it properly. Mm-hmm. In inverted commas, as he does the air commas in the air. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of rolled the dice and, you know, I signed a deal with Volkswagen with no particular knowledge of what I was signing up for. I just knew I wanted to go and do it properly. And, you know, but like I've told this story before, I think on the podcast, you know, I signed a deal to guarantee I would bring X amount of pounds and I didn't have a penny when I signed the deal, and nothing focuses the mind. And that was kind of the next thing for me. I wanted to drive again with a work team as such in the British Rally mm-hmm. Championship, and I didn't have any aspirations beyond that. Even I'm pretty convinced the time when I did it, I could have quite happily turned up, went over the start ramp, and then went, that's it, I've achieved all my childhood ambitions of driving a rally car in the British Rally Championship. But of course, then you do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and it kind of pushes you on and you want to do more. Well, I want to do a World Championship event now. I want to do this. I want to do that. So I kind of get that, but my personal thing, and whether it's, you know, I didn't go into it as a career, so maybe that's the difference. Obviously, you kind of had a career path. I suppose, looking at it from perhaps somebody from my side, Trev, it's maybe we could shorten that 10 years and go, okay, well, we've got, you know, a 2-year plan or a 3-year plan, maybe, you know, I want to go and do BTRDA and win Group N, and then I want to move, you know, take that Group N card and it's still homologated. I want to go and do a couple of ERC rounds because I can make my own notes there. Or, you know, something like that. That can be adjusted, can't it? That's something where we can make it, I suppose, realistic in our own minds. And I'm not decrying what you've just described there, obviously, because, you know, you had this thing of finding millions. But, you know, the reality is most people now who go rallying are people who have perhaps gone to work and earned some pennies, or, you know, the family has, and that's kind of how they do it. So that can be adjusted, surely.
Of course. And the reason, you know, the 10-year plan was, as I said at the outset, for somebody who's serious about it and wants to become a multiple world champion, that's how far you've got to look in advance to do it. Exactly as you're saying, and, you know, I have these conversations with people who just want to go out and have fun. And it's great. Go out, have fun, and then do the next event, have fun. But if you want to put a little bit more structure in it, then start to plan where you want to be, as you say, in 2 years, 3 years' time, and then work back from that. The whole point of this is you've got a target to aim for, and then along the way you've got milestones that are realistic, that are specific and they're in place, and you've got something that you can work towards. Now, the budget side of things, going back to what you said, of course, you're not going to search for £1 million or €1 million budgets to do what you want to do rally-wise, but you can certainly expand what you do if you're better at selling yourself. And again, there's these knowledge, these skills that you can start to identify. So instead of you going out and doing, for example, in the UK, maybe BTRDA events or airfield events, if you want to in the second, third year, you could escalate that up and do something a little bit more. But only if that's something that you enjoy doing. Of course, along the way, you're going to have to sacrifice something to do that. And we'll talk about that later on. But the first thing we need to do is to establish what the end goal looks like. And then we'll work back and put in some milestones along the way. And you're right, what we need to identify at this early stage is specific goals. Now, I'm not talking about I want to be faster, because that doesn't make a lot of sense. If I want to be faster by 0.2 of a second per kilometre, then that's something that's specific. It's something that you can measure. And the only way you're going to measure it is if you know how fast you are now, compared to the fastest in your class or whatever it may be.
It's faster, perhaps, not, again, this is, you used this thing, and I did listen back to last week's, and this change of language again. Should faster not perhaps be better?
Performing better, yeah. And it's only just some words that are picked out. So performance, how do you measure it, though? So if you're going to be better, how would you measure you're better or not?
I suppose it's very old. It's times, isn't it? Or, you know, you could, I suppose, how deep you want to go with it. Could you go, okay, well, yeah, the times are okay, but
yes,
watching that on board back, that's really well driven or whatever. I'm really happy with my car control on that, or, you know, the notes have worked really well there. Perhaps we need to keep watching this because that's the way we need it to be now. So that's, again, another way of evaluating a stage or a rally.
Yeah, as long as the feedback you're talking about is accurate, and if a detective watched it, he could be able to say exactly the same thing, because sometimes it gets a bit skewed, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I tend to try and stick, if I can, to something that's specific. So in other words, a goal that you can actually nail 100%, either did it or you didn't do it. Some form of measurement has to happen as well. If you change things, you need to know whether it's helping or it's hindering. You have to be right in what you said. It has to be achievable. It's something that you can do, and you're not going to be held back. But that whole achievable side of things, you need to be careful with limiting beliefs. So based on what I've done up to date, then is that achievable yet? If we forgot about that, those limiting beliefs and forget about budget and time constraints and all of that. Let's just have a dream and stick a dream in place, and then we'll come back to it later on. As I say, you can always come back to that. So it has to be relevant as well, relevant to what you want to improve on. So you said, I want to actually look back and see, yeah, I've got better control of the car there. Therefore, if I've got better control, I'm going to be faster potentially. And I keep going back to this performance is why most people do it. Or if you just want to enjoy it, I had a better skid there, more control of the car. What allowed me to keep control of the car there? How come I could hold that skid for longer, or whatever, maybe that slide for longer? And the big thing really for me is around being having a time limit on it. So some sort of a time limit where you're holding yourself accountable for it. And it's one of the first things that I'll do with anybody who approaches me is I'll put together a long-term goal and then start putting in the milestones as we go through it. And depending on what that person wants to achieve, depending on what the why is. So the why would be, in your case, go out and have more fun and enjoy myself in it. That will come at a cost, not just financially, but cost to time-wise that you could spend elsewhere, potentially with your family. We spoke about that before. So the first thing is why do you want to do it? What do you want to achieve from it? And then what do you want to achieve as a long-term goal? Then work back and build in the milestones along the way.
I guess the milestones are really important. Without stating the obvious, you're not going to just go out and run a marathon, are you? You know, you're going to go out and do your first 10K, and then, you know, you'll do, you know, 20K or whatever. You know, you'll build it up. And I guess that makes that jump between each one a lot more manageable. Okay. And not as daunting, I guess.
Yeah, so we'll talk about where people are currently, where the performance is currently. We'll leave that one until the week after next. I want to really examine the beliefs next week. But yeah, for my 10-year plan, or our 10-year plan as it was with Neil Whedon and I at the time, we brought that back into 5 years, 3 years, 1 year, 6 months, 3 months, 1 month, and then into each rally with an overall plan for the rally. With an overall plan for each leg of the rally and with a plan for each stage of the rally. Right down to even on my timesheets, a tip I got from Jean Todt, I think it was at the time, was the cumulative distance of a rally. I would count that down per stage. So in other words, if we got a puncture, I could work out really quickly how much we need to pull back and what that needed to be per kilometre that was left in the rally. So again, bite-sized chunks. That retrospective counting down cumulative mileage or kilometre total, then that gives us something to play with. So every single stage we went out on, we knew exactly what we needed to do. That was all part of the plan before the rally. And then, as I said, you can adjust it all of the time. But right at the end, the reason we did everything, the reason the effort went into it was because we had an end goal that was achievable, realistic, and it was time-bound. So we had to get there in 10 years. That was the plan.
Obviously, you made reference, obviously, what you did with Neil. Do you feel there has to be a partnership? Do you think, a driver needs to sit down with a co-driver, you know, if they're serious and go, this is what we need to do as a long-term goal? Because obviously, we see people changing co-drivers and stuff all the time these days. Does it need to be a shared passion, or is it accepted that maybe, you know, a driver or indeed a co-driver which has got the, you know, this drive to crack on over a 5 or 10 year period will indeed need to move on, a co-driver moves on from a driver, or indeed a driver moves on from another co-driver and stuff like that. You know, does it then break down into individual, or is it seen as a pairing?
Yeah, it comes down to attitude at the end of the day, Tony. You know, it's the amount of effort that you have to put in, the sacrifices that you have to make in order to do that will depend on the individual's approach to it. Attitude's a huge thing. As I say, the three main things are the knowledge that you've got currently and the knowledge that you need to have in order to make it to the end goal that you talked about. The attitude's there as well. No doubt about it, but it's the skills. So skills you can improve on. Everything that Sebastian Ogier does or Sebastian Loeb has done, those skills come quite naturally. A lot of the car control and various things like that to those guys. Those are skills you can learn. If you look at Olympic sports, they use coaches to help develop the skills. The reason that most people don't do it is because they don't put the effort into it. And it depends on the amount of hours that you've got. to achieve that. But knowledge, skills and attitude are the three things that are going to propel you towards it. And it's down to the amount of effort that those people in. So, yeah, to answer your question, you can get situations where the driver, the co-driver, is more determined to make it than the other. But as we know, and I've been involved in teams right up to World Championship winning teams, the teams that work the best and the highest performing teams, not just in sport, but in business as well. And most of my work now is coaching teams in business and sales teams in particular. And it's no secret that the ones who get on the best and all see a common goal and they're all working towards it, supporting each other to that goal, are the ones who perform the best, and they're the ones who bring home the biggest amount of bacon.
I guess, you know, I'm conscious we kind of stay in syllabus as well here. We don't move on to the next bit because it's very, very easy when we're just chatting like this, obviously, to kind of, so I'm holding back as well because I've got loads of stuff I want to say, but I realize that's going to take us into the next thing. Yeah. Now, do you think, again, without naming people, you know, some of the guys that I've messaged in, for instance, you know, they've had goals, and I guess, this does fall into the next. How honest do you think you have to be with yourself with those long term goals? I guess without going into the next syllabus, that's what I'm really conscious of. But how honest even at this point do you feel you need to be?
What do you mean honest? Just explain what you mean by honest.
I guess you know, I don't believe in putting a cap on anything. You know, the best thing that ever happened, you know, I can only use me. And I'm not just talking about rallying, I'm talking about in life. I was never ever told I couldn't do something.
Yeah.
So everything I've done, I said I was going to do when I was a kid, whether it's me going rallying or whether it's me in business, I said I was going to do it. And I was never told by my parents, "Oh, don't be silly, you can't do that." Okay. They always went, "Yeah, okay, fine." And they've never ever questioned it.
Some people get motivation from being told that they can't do it.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I had people around me, friends and stuff like that, that always raised an eyebrow when I said, you know, I can remember, you know, probably the days of watching you guys doing BRC and stuff like that when I was a snotty-nosed YTS working in a shipping company and, you know, sat there with friends saying, I'm going to do that one day, and they laughed at me. Mm-hmm. And it was brilliant, you know, and that, yes, I did use that motivation from those guys, but certainly from close family, the best gift I was ever given was the fact that I was never had limits put on me.
Mm-hmm. Same with me.
Yeah.
And I was supported and encouraged to do it on the back of, okay, you're moving away from the family home, which, you know, for the first plenty of years of my life, I went backpacking for 3.5 years, so I was able to be independent. But it's still a big move to move across to a different country to pursue something. You're throwing everything in, remember. You're saying, right, okay, I've got a couple of quid to get me over the first part of it. And on the back of that, then I'll put myself in situations. And this is the big thing that a lot of people don't do, I think. And there's certainly capacity for more people to find opportunities. And the really successful people are the ones who seek out the opportunities, are able to identify that opportunity and then do something with it. There's plenty of times you've been in a situation, maybe met somebody at a party who you think can help you out. You may be lacking the confidence to go and talk to them. And even if you go and talk to them, to take a business card from them, explain why, what you need to do, and then follow it up. And as I've always said, you know, people are always willing to help. As long as you go to them and say, listen, this is what I want to do. Can you help me? They'll say, yes. Here's what you should do. And I was always that person who went back really quickly and said, I've done that, what else can I do? You know, and that's effectively how I worked so well with Richard Burns and people like that. You know, I'd meet up. And at the time, as I said to you before, we needed to find what a perfect rally driver, a rally co-driver looked like. And once you build that model, then you start to look, how can I put myself in situations where I can create that?
So from your side, you know, we've used obviously your relationship with Neil. Did you handpick one another? You know, was it this marriage made in heaven that you're both on the same page at the same time? This is why I was asking before. You know, is it important that it's a driver co-driver thing if you are looking to make a career to try and forge forward? Obviously, we all know things happen, you know, as time ticks by. But was it the fact that you guys were on the same page at the same time?
I'll tell you the story. It's quite interesting for two or three different reasons, but it's about taking this opportunity, spotting an opportunity and going with it. So the reason I eventually moved over to the UK was in 1996, Robin Phillips, who was part of the Volkswagen Junior team many years before, ran by David Sutton Motorsports. So without getting into the detail, Robin was very quick. He was one of the quickest drivers in Northern Ireland. So he asked me to do the British Championship in 1996. And I thought, okay, a bit like you were talking about, I'll go and do it. It's going to be a great experience. But all my heroes are there. You know, I lacked confidence back then. I thought, okay, I'll go and do it. And then I started to look around. I thought, why is he doing that? Why is he doing that? Then I thought, I can actually do this. And at the time, I was buying cars in England for dealers back in Northern Ireland between 1992 and 1996. I thought, well, I could base myself here. If it doesn't work out, then I can go back home again. So that's why I thought I'd move across. But first rally was in Wales, and our car was ran by a guy called John McLean, who went on to be Petter Solberg's number one mechanic in the year 2003, and he won the World Championship. So him, as well as a couple of other people, were involved in the car. They knew Asquith Autosport, because they were running David Higgins in the British Championship that year. So through that, I met Asquith, and I went to the motorhome, a little bit hungry once, and Mark Higgins was talking to David Higgins at the time, and one thought I knew the other, and I sort of went there just to have a quick sandwich, being a little bit cheeky, the way you might do it. Yeah. So on the back of that conversation then, I got talking to Mark Higgins and David Higgins, and then literally within 2 or 3 weeks, I got the call from David Higgins to ask if I'd do Donegal Rally with him, because his regular co-driver at the time, Cliffy Simmons, couldn't do it. I thought, okay, I'll do that. And this is how it all happened. It just unfolded literally by me being a little bit cheeky and going and asking for a sandwich or grabbing a sandwich. And that's how I met David Higgins. So I did the rally with him, and completely blew my mind how professional Asquith Autosport were at the time. What they taught me was brilliant. On the back of that, we went another couple of rallies. Robin decided not to do the rest of the British Championship, but Asquith asked me if I'd come and help him out on the Manx Rally, and then eventually on Rally Group Britain to do some gravel notes for David Higgins. So that was how all of that happened. So again, seeing an opportunity, learning from it, being really hungry and absorbing everything like a sponge.
Quite literally in this case, being very hungry, by the way.
they'll have a laugh about it, you know. So that was what's happening with me. At the same time, Neil Wearden, that year, he had won the British Junior Championship with Peugeot Scholarship, but he was having a horrendous year. He had three big accidents in 1996. So his confidence was falling through the floor, so much so that in the Cambrian Rally that you just did last weekend, he asked David Senior to come and co-drive with him. And he was going to jack it. He said, if David Senior says I'm not good enough, I'm going to bin it. And yeah, that's it. I'm going to finish rallying, and I've had a go at it. So David Senior sat in with him at the time. He was working for Asquith, and he said, this guy's really good. So David Higgins is moving on the following year. Asquith eventually decided, right, we'll take Neil, we'll put him in the car. Would you like to get in with him? And that's how it all came together. So that's how Neil Wearden and I started the British Championship in 1997 in a Honda Civic with Asquith, and the full support of that team, an amazing team, who've nurtured plenty of people, such as Mark Higgins, Robbie Head, David Higgins, and the list goes on and on with those guys.
One last question. Yeah. Before, what type of sandwich was it?
Probably ham.
Strong choice.
Whatever was there.
Listen, folks, we've got another 7 parts of this to do. And if last week's anything to go by, I really hope you're enjoying these segments as we're doing them. Trev, same time, same place next week for you before you go. You're on your jollies though, aren't you?
No, I'll be home. I'll be back at work again, so I'm only going for a few days to Spain if I don't get snowed out of it.
So. Of course, you'll be right. Yeah. So, should we introduce what next week is going to be?
Yeah, again, it's just looking at the limiting beliefs. When you make this 10-year plan or 5-year plan or whatever it may be, you usually make it on the back of what you've done before. So what I want you to think about between now and then is, what if money wasn't an option? What if you had a load of time to put into it? Let's dream a little bit, because we'll come back and we'll look at that as we go through it.
Absolutely.
So that's the next stage of it.
There you go. Folks, stay with us. As I say, the people who've messaged us really, really do appreciate it. And yeah, we will be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole. And DJ Ryan Champion will be back with us next week to preview Rally Mexico and lots of other different bits and pieces. But please keep spreading the love, keep spreading the word. If you can do a review on iTunes for us, that would be wonderful. And we'll speak to you next week.